You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Well, it's another week. Another week is down. Jim is back. Welcome, Jim.
Hello, Jim.
Thank you, sirs. I had a great weekend in San Francisco. Very, very much too short, but I enjoyed it very much. Had some great meals. Met the girlfriend's family. She's still my girlfriend, so that's good. Ready to get back into the podcasting as a verb.
So what's new in the world of, I think you said that we had something to talk about with Pokemon this week.
Yes, so the new Pokemon update with the Gen 2 Pokemon dropped yesterday, I guess it was. I actually had not heard about this before. I just randomly opened up the game and was like, oh, there's new Pokemon. My app updated and there's not like two new Pokemon. There's like 80 or something. It's a lot of them. All new things to do with Pokemon, when in fact, I've actually been playing more over the last 2 weeks than I have over the last 2 months, because I've discovered two friends that are part of the traveling team that travel with me for work. They play as well. So I mean, Pokemon is, it's inherently a social game, really. I mean, it's a whole lot more fun when you're playing with other people. So once I found some other people to sit around and talk about it with or hunt Pokemon with, I actually have kind of started playing again a little more. So it's perfect timing for me. I just started back up and now we've got all these new little critters to find. A lot of the same, but again, it's, you know, new things to catch. They updated the interface a little bit. So for selecting your balls and selecting your fruit and things like that, there's some updates around that. So maybe I'll finally make level 30 now. I've been level 29 since probably Thanksgiving and I just haven't played enough to hit level 30. So maybe I'll finally hit 30 this weekend or the next couple of days. These levels at this point take a whole lot to,
as they should,
to get to.
Yeah, you got to make it last before you collect them all.
Yes, sirs. Yeah. I've heard an original Reddit thread that said levels at 29 are huge. And I saw a post that said from 38 to 40 takes as many experience points as it takes to get from 1 to 38. So it's definitely MMO style, huge jumps in experience once you hit about level 30.
Got to get that grind on.
Don't miss grinding like in World of Warcraft. Boy, what a task.
Exactly. It all reminds me of being like that episode of South Park where you're playing World of Warcraft. You're just out killing pigs, getting one experience point over and over and over, and you just do it forever until you amass something so you can go and
buy a new hat, a new helm.
Pretty much. So looking at the list of things we got to talk about this week, we have a lot of stuff to get into. So, Jim, why don't you kick us off with the Sonos news? There was an interesting article about how Sonos will take on Alexa and Google by integrating them. What's that all about, and what's your take?
So, yeah, we'll put the link in the show notes, but there was one of the guys from The Verge interviewed the new CEO for Sonos, talking to him about how they plan on, you know, doing this integration and how they're already working with Amazon on this. And we talked about it a couple episodes ago. It was the episode with Ryan in it, I believe. And our confusion was Sonos doesn't compete with Amazon Echo or, you know, those kind of speakers. It's really a totally different kind of speaker. But now reading this article, it made me realize that Sonos does sell that small Sonos Play speaker, which is, I think, in my mind, still a little bit bigger than an Echo. But I think a lot of people think of it as the same kind of thing. So most people aren't into audiophile sound, and not that the Sonos are audiophile level, but
audio P-H-I-L-E.
Yeah, but they're very nice sounding speakers, but they're also expensive. And when people look at, okay, Sonos Play versus an Amazon Echo, the Echo is still a little bit cheaper than the Play. It sounds pretty good, and it's also got Alexa built in, which, you know, and that's kind of the thing that I'm guessing is pushing them over the edge. Most of the Sonos that I was looking into buying were the bigger speakers that you would have sitting all about your house and, you know, to really crank up the sound. So it makes a little more sense that the Play One is the direct competitor to the Amazon Echo, and that they probably sell a whole lot more Play Ones than they do any other Sonos speakers. And so it kind of keeps the company going while they can make the bigger, nicer speakers for the people who want them. So they're going to try to integrate some of the Amazon, maybe Google stuff into their products, which I think makes perfect sense. And I don't think Amazon would have any problem with it because honestly, I think they sell the Echo so they can sell more stuff at Amazon, not necessarily just to sell more Echoes and put the other people who make speakers out of business. So anybody who wants to use Echo and put it in their product, I'm sure Amazon is fine with that because it just puts more Amazon into your home. And that's really their end game.
More ability to buy more Amazon stuff.
Exactly. So that's good. I mean, you know, if you were looking to buy a Play One, you might want to wait a little bit and see what's going to come out. On the Alexa front, I actually finally ordered a Dot for myself so I could see what this is all about. I have friends with them, and I've been in their houses and asked them to play jokes or ask them to play some music, but I don't own one myself. So I finally ordered one earlier this month, and it should be here by the end of February. They're, of course, on back order. So I'm finally getting with the current on getting me a Dot, so we'll see.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's taking you this long to jump on that bandwagon.
Then you can tell Alexa to turn off the exploitative lights.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that goes. See which one I end up preferring around the house.
Frustratingly, you still can't tell the Echo to play our podcast for some reason. That's not working with the integration with TuneIn for some reason, but solely on our podcast. I've been working on that, and it's been slow going. I don't understand why. It works fine in the mobile app, works fine on the web, does not work on the Alexa. It just says it can't do it right now for whatever reason. So that's kind of annoying. I did notice in the article that it says that no one has been in talks to buy Sonos. When they ask them point blank, has anyone been looking to buy you? They said no, which I found that kind of interesting.
Well, anybody can make a speaker. The real appeal about, of course, the Echo is the Alexa ability, whether it's to order more stuff or whether it's to automate your home. And the thing is Amazon doesn't really, and I'm just going to talk about the Echo, the big one with the big speaker in it. Amazon doesn't really tout that thing as a really nice speaker. They talk more about the 7 microphones that it has in it. Yeah, the thing will get loud, but it's still mono. You're not really going to hear your music in a stereo field, and it does rephase the music. So if you're listening to something like the Beatles, you don't hear like a guitar line that seems far off because your right speaker is turned down too low or it's too far away, which is how mono, you know, stereo to mono should work. Anyway, I mean, they've just never marketed the thing as a sort of a home speaker type for the audiophiles of the world. And I understand on the level of the consumer, they might get them confused simply because, well, it's just this little speaker that I can plug into the wall and set on the kitchen counter or in my bedroom or something. And they don't really understand the real difference other than that one might be $250 and one might be $180. But I still think that the consumers are sort of looking at it like, or the less informed consumers are looking at it sort of like, you know, 5 years ago, all the kids wanted an iPod dock. They want an iPod dock for their room or their bathroom or whatever, so they can listen to their Justin Bieber in the bathroom while they brush their teeth or something. And it's just not the same as some sort of generic speaker that you dock your iPad or iPhone to anymore.
I think, like you said earlier, you know, anybody can build a speaker, and that's true. And what Sonos has done is they've built a nice sounding speaker, and their thing, if you will, is this software.
Their proprietary network.
Yeah, is the proprietary network that syncs all these speakers together, and their app on the iPad or iPhone that lets you play all your music all over your house, you know, play one thing in one room and one thing in another, or the same thing over your whole house, sync it all up. And that's kind of their buy-in. That's their thing that, you know, why you would want to go with Sonos, in my opinion. I mean,
I agree.
To have the price point they do, it's got to be a good sounding speaker. And then to actually sell them, you've got to get something to bring people to listen to them, and then that's the software and the integration, where if you can have these things around your whole house, which is one of the reasons that I actually haven't jumped on the Sonos, because I live in a 900 square foot loft on the 8th floor downtown, and
that's basically one giant room. You don't have multiple rooms with traveling sound.
Right. I don't have multiple rooms. I don't need two different songs in two different rooms because I only have one room. You know, it's one of the reasons that I haven't jumped on it. I really would like to get the soundbar and the subwoofer just for my home system. And a couple of those plays for surrounds would be great. But that's $2,000. I mean, you're talking about $2,000 right there to get into that setup. And I just haven't decided that it's worth it yet. So we'll see. I mean, I hope Sonos can stick around and keep fighting. I know a couple weeks ago when we talked about it, it was with the point that, you know, hey, they fired their CEO, they're not selling stuff because they're fighting with Amazon. It was a really negative point of view, or, you know, future outlook for Sonos. So hopefully this new guy's got some good ideas and can keep him around, because I think we need people like Sonos making these kind of things. I really wish Apple would just buy them. They've got them in the Apple store now. Just buy them like they did Beats and keep the Sonos name and make it, you know, Apple Music super friendly. And, you know, please, Apple, just, you know, buy everything, you know, all the bacon that you have.
So let's talk about the new iPad Pro commercials that came out this week. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how it seemed as if Apple wasn't marketing the iPad Pro for the entirety of the product. It wasn't well known what it was for, what you could do with it. I mean, we knew because we own them, we play with them, it's our job to know. But the average market, the average person in the market just didn't seem to really be aware, as evidenced by when Jim would be in the airport or be in a meeting and people would say, hey, what's that? What do you use that for? So they really took these on this week, and they had a series of commercials where they showcased tweets where they were having problems doing things on PCs. And it's really interesting because they really put an emphasis on moving from a PC to the iPad Pro, not from another tablet, not from anything else. But if you don't need a PC, you need this. We don't get viruses, they said, or can I use this for real work? And they showed most things were shown in a split screen configuration, multitasking. They showed Word and its integration with the Apple Pencil. Very interesting stuff. What did you guys think about that?
I thought the commercials were very clever, especially the one that had the girl that was saying she was afraid of getting viruses. And he was like, no need to worry. No, don't be scared. Lamp starts to float across the room and says, except of ghosts.
I thought they were great, short to the point. I thought it was interesting that they really emphasized the built-in cellular on those devices, especially since that's one thing you still can't get in a MacBook. You know, is Apple still not putting cellular chips into those devices? I have a Wi-Fi only iPad Pro, and I now know that I will never own a Wi-Fi only iPad anything again. That it frustrates me enough when I have to try to connect it to my phone or tether it or do things, that I'm just gonna pay the tax and get the one with the cellular built in and just be done with it. And these commercials almost prove that point, where they, you know, they really emphasize, you know, it's got the wireless built in.
Internet anywhere.
Right.
It's funny you mentioned that.
I know you're a proponent of the tethering, Brian, and that you've never really had as many problems with it as I have. But it just seems like I always have problems connecting to my phone, or it'll connect and I want to do things on both devices. And now I've got this big blue bar on the top of my phone that's pushing down everything on the screen. So
hashtag first world problems.
Yeah, me just being OCD. But
the clock's not where it's supposed to be.
Get yourself a Plus. That'll never be a problem.
True. If I had that big old screen. I think in the future, my plan is actually I'm switch my phone over to Verizon. I think if I do end up getting a cellular iPad Pro, which I plan on doing once, you know, if they come out with anything new on it, you know, later this year, next year, I'll probably try to get on AT&T with that. So that way I have a little bit of both.
Ew. All right, so we're getting ahead of ourselves, and we're going to talk about the cell carriers and their big news in a minute. No, I'm with you on that one. In the past, I've owned the iPad plus cellular. I mean, I'm sorry, the Wi-Fi plus cellular iPads. My iPad Air was a cellular model as well. I think that was the last one that I bought. For me, it was out of necessity originally, because my employer at the time, you know, you couldn't put any of your devices on their network. So I needed to have something that was completely independent of them. And then when I changed jobs and my employer was a little bit more friendly toward attaching your own devices to their Wi-Fi network, that was no longer an issue. So I didn't spring for it. However, I was thinking the exact same thing that you just said, is that I plan on getting the cellular model when the new iPads are refreshed. Not that I hate tethering. I don't hate the tethering, honestly. For me, it has always worked pretty flawlessly. When I'm sitting in an airport, I always have I always have my phone attached to like an external battery. We've talked about that before. Juicing up my phone, having my phone run out of battery as a result of tethering is never usually an issue. And I only needed it for the duration of whatever work that I'm doing when I'm traveling. You travel a bit more than I do, so I could definitely see that. However, the thing that's going to make me do that is, now that unlimited plans have returned to all the major carriers, then that has made it a more compelling option for me to go around and you know, say maybe now's the time to go ahead and get a cellular iPad the next time that they get refreshed. Only because I know I'm still morally opposed to paying a per device connection fee. I hate that so much. It galls me to pay $20 a month to connect something to a network that it really doesn't make sense. But I'll probably take the hit and do it anyway, just for the fun of it, since now it's unlimited. I will say that, you know, the iPads in the past haven't been carrier specific like the phones have been. So, I mean, there's no way I would go back to AT&T, even though I'm a customer of theirs for home internet. There's no way I would do that. I plan on either doing Verizon or T-Mobile in the iPad. Years ago, when I was an AT&T customer, I had Verizon on my iPad, and I used that when I would travel around to see what their coverage was like and what their average speeds were. And it helped me decide whether or not I would switch to them as a carrier, which I ultimately did. And I think I'm going to do the same thing with T-Mobile. I have the free SIM that they gave away a few years ago where you get 200 megabytes for life. But I may just do a month-to-month contract with T-Mobile and, you know, just see how their service compares to Verizon in different places, just in case I ever want to make that switch. I don't see myself doing it because it's been my anecdotal experience of coverage is not as good in the smaller towns and places that I tend to go. If you're just going to be in major cities, I'm sure you'd probably be fine. But I want to see how that's going to work. But I would see no reason to use AT&T whatsoever. It would be down to being between Verizon and T-Mobile. And even all the reports pretty much bear that out. You know, as T-Mobile has acquired more spectrum, actually they bought 3.3 billion of it from Verizon back in 2014 of that lower spectrum, lower megahertz spectrum. They've gotten a lot better, so we'll see. But that's probably what I'll do there. I did like the fact though that they did emphasize this is something you can do real work on, and they are taking a path of evangelizing it, getting that word out. Why do you want this huge thing? You know, you mentioned that there's no Macs with cellular connectivity, but there's a good reason for that. I mean, macOS was not designed for the age of the internet, and that's not a slam against macOS. But we've talked before in past episodes that, you know, sometimes when I've traveled and when I, of course, was on a metered data plan, I installed a program called Trip Mode, because Trip Mode would give you it's sort of like a little snitch firewall or micro snitch or whatever it's called. It tells you what's trying to access the internet. You can kind of lock it down so only certain apps can get it, and you're fine. There was a story on ATP a few years ago where Marco went to WWDC and was tethered to his phone and went to bed, and an episode of Mad Men aired, and he automatically downloaded it through iTunes and HD overnight and completely hit his data cap for the month. And it was the very first of the month, right? I mean, of course, you know, the data caps are now going away if you're on the right plan, but still, it bears out a good point. You know, those OSs aren't really designed, macOS in particular, doesn't really deal well with cellular. Now, they could change that, but iOS seems a little bit more friendly to say, hey, I'm on a cellular network. Why don't I be a little more judicious about what I do? I'm not going to pull down a 500 meg update. That might be a little excessive right now. So I do kind of appreciate that.
Wow. A lot to digest there. First off, great segue into AT&T now has streaming. And I'm sure last week y'all talked about the Verizon streaming.
No, we did not. It did not get announced until Sunday night.
Ah.
And then it was made available. As I was working out at 6 a.m. on Monday morning on the elliptical, I actually changed my plan mid-workout to the unlimited plan. But it was not announced. Even as of Sunday morning when we recorded last week, it was not announced.
Huh. No, I thought surely that I knew it was last weekend, but I wasn't sure on what last week. So since last weekend, both Verizon and AT&T have announced the return of unlimited plans, which is kind of crazy, I guess. And I mean, if one does it, the other one is sure to follow. It was always Verizon, I think, was always usually the last one to the party on a lot of these things because, hey, we're the best network. We're going to do what we want. And then they finally have to like, oh, okay, I'll switch. But this time it was Verizon switching that caused AT&T to switch. So you were talking about earlier, you said something about a compelling reason to switch to AT&T. And I think another reason for that would be that you could get this unlimited now, which is good. And also the zero rating on some things, which they do now on the DirecTV Now. So you could actually stream all your DirecTV and watch TV anywhere you are and it not account against your data caps on AT&T. And so that would be the one reason that I would do that on my iPad, to where I could watch ESPN or whatever I wanted anywhere I was on my iPad and then not count against my data caps, which would be great.
Well, strictly speaking, there are no data caps anymore. It is unlimited. Now, let's talk about that for a second. Out of the three carriers, the best bang, or I'm sorry, four carriers if we include sad little Sprint, but out of the four carriers, I was looking at these plans extensively. There's been a lot about it.
They're within 1%.
Lies and damn statistics, right?
So let's talk about those the differences in those data plans, right? So Sprint and AT&T have the weakest of the four, right? Really, this is between T-Mobile and Verizon. And I was doing a little reading on this, and the reason that Verizon brought it back is the customer churn from T-Mobile has really been eating into them. The people that have been leaving Verizon haven't been going to AT&T. They've been going to T-Mobile. So this was really a shot across T-Mobile's bow, who then turned around and matched everything that Verizon was doing. So it really seems to be neck and neck between them. The reason that AT&T's is not as compelling to me is several reasons. First, they've had the unlimited plan on AT&T back for a while, but you had to subscribe to DirecTV to get it. Now they've opened it up to everyone. T-Mobile and Verizon allow you 10 gigabytes of tethering a month. AT&T's has no tethering. And by default, streaming is still compressed inside of the AT&T plan by default. Now you can go in and turn it off, but by default, they throttle that down to standard definition. And it's priced more in line with Verizon's plan than it is with T-Mobile's, despite the fact that it doesn't even match Verizon feature for feature. So to me, if you're already on AT&T and you want to stick with them, then maybe you would do that, but I can't imagine any other reason you'd want to do it. Now, you talk about the unlimited streaming from DirecTV counting toward it. That might be a good reason. However, since none of these plans have caps, they have the deprioritization. And I've been watching Twitter and reading the press releases. Verizon in particular was saying, look, when it comes to the deprioritization, it doesn't mean the moment you cross 22 gigs, you're going to be throttled down to 3G speeds. What it means is if you're in a congested area, and they said it could be like, picture it in a commute. Your deprioritization could be the length of a traffic light being red, or it could be the length of your entire commute. It just depends on how saturated your tower is that you're on at that time. So otherwise, you could be getting full 4G speeds the rest of the time. So even being able to stream something, it doesn't mean you're automatically going to have a degraded performance the moment you move past 22 gigabytes, depending on where you are. So that's something that's important to note.
That's the part I was happy about with Verizon, the deprioritization. It wasn't the way I always read the Sprint or the T-Mobile plans were you get 18, you get 25 gigs or whatever. And then after that, bam, you're on 3G speeds. Like it was just strictly a cutover of once you hit this threshold, you still get, 100% unlimited, but we're just not going to give it to you as fast. So that way you can't rack up the data. You can't keep racking up the data at the same speed as you were, earlier in your month or whatever. With Verizon,
historically, that's been the case, but yeah, they're all doing it now this way.
Yeah, so I like that. Yeah, the prioritization, it was the way they worded it was like top 1% of users, and then reading the fine print, that's where it said the top 1% of the users is at or about 22 gigs. What I'm interested in is now that we're all unlimited, or not at all, but as people start switching to unlimited, does that 22 gig number start going down as more people start using more stuff? The top 1%, how does that number fluctuate as more and more people start to go unlimited? Are they going to have to bring that down to, 19, 18, 7, is that number going to have to float down? Because they didn't give a hard cap. They didn't say 22 gig. They said top 1% of users. So that way that...
They said absolutely. AT&T and Verizon are at 22 gigs. T-Mobile is at 26 gigs. And I forget what Sprint's is because Sprint's not important. They suck anyway. But
I swear I thought for Verizon, it said the top 1%, which right now sits at 22 gigs.
No, it says it gives a quantifiable number. It says 22 gigs, same as AT&T, and T-Mobile is 26. So I don't think that number is going to go down. If anything, if you open it up, people's usage is going to go up. The question is, how will the deprioritization work when more people start to exceed that 22 gigs? If all three of us are in the same area and we've all gone over 22 gigs for the month, how does it rate who to lower first? Those types of how that metric actually works on the back end for figuring out the deprioritization. Will video get throttled lower than music, which will get throttled lower than email? Or I don't know. And that's something that we have really no idea about. I think when you open it up to this and say, people, you don't have any data caps anymore, people are going to consume more and more data. So I think if anything, and as long as we have competition, right? T-Mobile and Sprint had tried to merge, I guess, a few years back. And, they were worried about the regulatory pressure, so they backed off. Well, now they have an administration in the White House that's pretty favorable to mergers and acquisitions. So now T-Mobile is looking to merge with Sprint. So if we drop from four carriers to three, what will that do to the competition? Absolutely, T-Mobile has been the one that's been driving this. They have been, and their gambit has paid off. They've come from a very far third place into, according to OpenSignal, they're nipping at Verizon's heels pretty well, which is weird because AT&T still considers Verizon their biggest, they're equal, but it's looking more and more like that's not the case. Verizon is looking like at T-Mobile, like they are their competition, not AT&T. And speaking of streaming DirecTV, DirecTV Now is a steaming pile of garbage. I have been using that. I've got my parents using it and we got locked in on the lower rate. Oh my gosh, this is like the most expensive beta test in the history of products. Like every week there is an outage. Every time they release an update to the app, there is a big problem. So, my parents text me yesterday, we can't get, these channels. And I load it up. Sure enough, I can't either. All I do is go to Twitter now and just search for tweets that are labeled with DirecTV Now. and the guide is broken. Channels aren't available. This is not, and I'm able to verify it every time. This is no wonder it doesn't count against your data cap because it's never going to work.
There was actually a full-blown Verizon outage in St. Louis this week. We actually got a corporate email about it. I work for a large internet provider or provider of internet, and they actually sent out an email to all employees just saying, hey, Verizon is not working in St. Louis, so if you get, you know, calls about this or something, you know, Verizon's having the problem.
The internet's out, so if you don't get this email, well, too bad.
And so I went to Twitter because mine never stopped working, but I'm a little bit outside of St. Louis. And sure enough, I saw a bunch of people on Twitter. And what they were actually saying is they couldn't make or get phone calls. I didn't see where people were saying anything about data, but they were saying they couldn't make or get phone calls on their phones on Verizon, which is really odd. I mean, I haven't seen that in a long time.
Depending on your phone and how new it is, a lot of your calls go over the LTE network instead of the older 3G network. So if you have that toggled on your iPhone, as long as you're getting data, you may not even notice it. Had you flipped that off and made it so that, you know, it was using the older method for making calls, you might have seen the outage. But man, DirecTV, just a pile of hurt. And PlayStation, they have the inability to process my credit card. I've been round and round with them, and it doesn't seem to work. I attach PayPal to it. That doesn't work. And then you go to their forums and you search, and there's just pages of people, my credit card was working up until yesterday, and now no matter what credit card I enter, it just says it's invalid. So I'm having to load gift cards onto my stupid PlayStation account to keep the View account going. So I'm really not liking that service either. They're really making cable look like a better option right now. They're actually making Comcast look good in comparison. That's how bad both of those services are to me right now.
Wow, that's pretty low.
That is pretty bad. So let's talk about WWDC getting moved from San Francisco to San Jose. So Apple announced this week, not only did they announce when WWDC was going to be, but when they were going to open up the floodgates to let people start applying for tickets, which is a big departure from the way it's gone in the past. But that's kind of strange, man. They've moved from San Francisco, which holds, you know, they have Open World and VMworld and all these other conferences that are huge, much bigger than WWDC. But they've made the decision to move back to closer to Cupertino. What do you guys think about this?
Well, it seems kind of obvious to me, just in that San Jose is sort of the mecca of tech. So for them to put it there, it just seems kind of obvious. It seems like they're just doing it early just to let people know that we're not doing it in San Francisco this year. So, you know, be sure to make your travel plans appropriately.
It's all location, location, location. I mean, it sounds to me like biggest reason for the move is because San Jose is so much closer to Apple headquarters. They can shuttle engineers back and forth instead of having to make a whole day trip to San Francisco. Having been out there and looked into going down to Apple headquarters from San Francisco just as a tourist, yes, it is. It's like a full hour because I was staying right near Moscone. So, it's pretty much a full hour to get down to Apple headquarters from there. So I completely understand that. It'll be interesting to see how San Jose can handle the influx and the, you know, the crowds, because just from what I've read, it's not necessary. It's more of a sleepy at night town. You know, people work there, but they don't live there. So that should be interesting. I thought it was funny. Like I actually was in San Francisco last weekend and, you know, right there by Moscone, and I got to see it all. And then, you know, a couple days later, we're never having it here again. And I think the other reason they announced it early is because my guess is people book up hotel rooms around there way in advance, just because with hotel rooms, you can easily cancel them before, you know, a month before, a week before, without any penalty. And so if you do get tickets, you've got your hotel room booked. If you don't get tickets, you can cancel. I'm sure there are a whole lot of room cancellations around Moscone this past week for people that had already booked up rooms there that are having to switch down to San Jose. So that probably sucked for the hotels. And
well, it's not like they don't price gouge during that time anyway. I mean, hotels in San Francisco in general are extremely expensive compared to other places that I've gone. I mean, upwards of $400 a night for other conferences that I've gone to. And these aren't opulent rooms either. They are just, you know, standard rooms. So no sympathy there for allowing that, for seeing that happen at this point.
I did see that mentioned in the Gruber article as well, that Schiller mentioned that it'd probably be cheaper for people to travel to San Jose than it would be San Francisco. And so they're, you know, trying to make it more accessible, which you've never heard from Apple before in your life.
Well, it doesn't impact their bottom line. That's the other thing. They're going to sell those 5,000 tickets regardless.
Yeah, I think they should have an eBay style. That would be hilarious just to see how much the tickets got up to for WWDC.
No, that would be folks going in there and just paying exorbitant prices, knowing, you know, I don't know.
A whole room full of Marcos.
That'd be a great name for the podcast this week, or the episode title. Let's talk about the iPhone 8 home button UI implementation. So there was a rumor that came out this week that said that Apple is looking at ways to put the home button and Touch ID in particular so that it can be accessed from anywhere inside the screen. What do you guys think about this?
It's pretty cool. I think it's almost like a touch bar, sort of like on the new MacBook Pro.
But you can only access the Touch ID portion from one part of that, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I can just see them expanding other things, maybe putting other soft keys in an app down there next to the home button, possibly either Apple doing it or adding it to their API so that, you know, you'd have the clock way up at the top and then have maybe your tabs for your app down at the bottom next to the home button, possibly.
I guess it's okay. I mean, don't move my home button. I've had this phone for a long time and I know where it's at, and mechanical now that I just know where to go hit that button, even though the button is actually not mechanical now. I saw somewhere else that they're working on face recognition with the camera instead of actually doing the Touch ID to get you in, which I thought was interesting. I think we're going to have a lot of new stuff with this next iPhone that they've been holding back on the whiz bang stuff till now for this generation iPhone. So I think y'all may have talked about it last week, but there was the rumor about the OLED displays that they had ordered, you know, just umpteen millions of those already. So, you know, we might be finally getting to get a OLED display. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if the whole screen went OLED without the true button on the bottom.
Not just facial recognition either, 3D facial recognition, because facial recognition had existed in some of the Android phones in the past, and some of those could have been fooled. If I printed out a picture of your face and just held it up on top of my neck in front of a phone and it was set to unlock with your face, it would have unlocked it. So there, if the rumors are to be believed, there would have to be some sort of depth to that. So I'd have to 3D print a model of your face to be able to unlock your phone. So I think that would be a nice thing. It would be nice to be able to give people the option to be able to use something other than a fingerprint. If I'm working out and my hands are sweaty and I go to unlock my phone, it's got to fail two or three times before it will pop the use your passcode instead. So I would, it doesn't ever seem to make a difference. Also, try eating three Triscuits, and whatever that film it leaves on your thumb also makes it hard to unlock your phone. I've noticed that that's the one thing that I've seen that would mess that up. But yeah, I would like an alternate way to be able to unlock the phone.
I've never eaten just three Triscuits, by the way. You've got to eat like a dozen Triscuits at least.
You've wiped your finger on your pants two or three
times. So much as one Triscuit will mess it up, I've noticed. But if I'm cooking, that's another thing too. You know, I've got, let's say you get flour on your finger, it causes you a problem. You get a phone call, something like that. It's, I don't know. It's just, I would rather see some sort of alternate method to Touch ID, maybe as a backup, if nothing else.
I immediately went to picture in my head of Brian with his head in a turkey, sort of like Mr. Bean.
The one where he put his head up a chicken? Was that the name of that one?
Or that one episode of Friends. It was a turkey, but yes, and put the sunglasses. I think it was Monica that did that. Had the big oversized sunglasses on it and standing at the door dancing. You can find that on Jiffy. I know that GIF exists.
You were saying that you'd have to print a 3D model of a head. That'll be the next sort of cloak and dagger trick that Tom Cruise uses in the next Mission Impossible. He'll crack into something after he's 3D printed a picture of Ving Rhames' head or something.
I always hated how they ripped off the faces in those movies. Like, they'd have on a mask and they'd rip it off. And I think in Mission Impossible 2, they ripped it off like three or four times. It was like an episode. It was like an old Scooby-Doo cartoon. They pull off a mask and they pull off another mask and they all fit perfectly underneath. Now, you'll remember when Touch ID was released, there were a whole bunch of people, oh, this is insecure. You can fake this. If I 3D print your thumb on a special service that actually can conduct, it's like, yeah, if you can get to that level, you're going to get into my phone anyway, probably. But this is that sort of thing has been if I lift your fingerprint off a glass and then make a 3D printing of it, and it's in, and I don't know.
Yeah, I remember seeing an article right after Touch ID released about you could make fingers out of gummy bears or something. You could take a print of somebody's fingerprint with a gummy bear and break into their phone.
Well, if it were that easy, I have a feeling that we'd see a lot more Touch ID phones being compromised. But then again, you've also noticed if a phone hasn't been unlocked by Touch ID in like 2 or 3 days, you have to put in the passcode. So I never really understood the value of that, but I guess there you go. If I don't pick up my iPad in 2 days, I can't use my Touch ID. I have to put in the code. So I've noticed even having that as a vulnerability, a so-called vulnerability, it's still, if you still don't know the code, you can't get into it. And I think the FBI proved that with the San Bernardino shooter phone. If they could have just done something where they're able to reconstruct a fingerprint, they would have been happy to do it instead of trying to brute force the code.
Or could they just cut the shooter's finger off?
They could do that. Did you know that after you die, within like a month, your fingerprints are completely gone?
Didn't know that. Is that just because all of your fluid in your body sort of dries up?
Never really understood why that's the case, but your fingerprints are one of the things that go pretty quickly.
Or maybe it's because you're dead and you're not reproducing new skin cells.
I did not know that.
And you're breaking down at the same time. But wow, that's a morbid way to segue into something else. I don't really have anything else. I think we hit pretty much everything that I wanted to talk about. So what do you guys have for our closing topics?
I had an interesting side that I heard on NPR the other day about Apple's new spaceship headquarters. Apple was adamant with the construction people about not having any thresholds anywhere in any doorway so that no engineer has to adjust their gait to walk through a door so it won't distract from their work. And I've always heard, you know, if you walk through a doorway, not necessarily over a threshold, but if you walk through a doorway into another room, you might forget what you went into that room for. And I can kind of see that comparison there. I don't know if they're just worried about an engineer that's so drilled into their brain that they can't think about where they're walking. So, you know, they might trip over a threshold as they walk into the building or something. But anyway, I thought it was interesting.
That's why I live in one big room, so I don't have that problem. I don't have to walk into another room. I just stand up and I forget something.
Jim never forgets anything, ever.
God, I wish. I forget. I stand up and don't know why I stood up unless I've got to pee.
Yeah, I think it's just more that they like the aesthetic more than anything else. I don't know that it's necessarily they don't want someone to trip over a threshold. I think they want the most unique architecture they could possibly get. And this is one of the last things, too, that Steve Jobs sort of oversaw before his death. There's that angle, but I don't think anyone's really been mentioning that.
I don't really think I had anything left for this week. It was kind of a quiet week. You know, we talked about the unlimited stuff. There is the Apple TV 4K possibility rumor. Not something that I don't have a 4K yet TV yet. But I guess that if you do have a 4K TV out there, there are rumors that Apple's going to make this 4K capable Apple TV coming up here soon. Either one of y'all be interested in something like that?
Just so happens we spent a lot of time discussing that last week. Our consensus was the TVs we currently have aren't 4K, and even if we got them, there's not an abundance of 4K programming that's readily available, right? I can't go to iTunes and get any 4K content, though I assume that would change, but I also assume that would change when they started selling a 4K and a 5K iMac, and it didn't. So that's a little disappointing. But, you know, a few shows on Netflix, if you pay for the higher subscription, or at least that's the way it used to be, wouldn't even make it worth your while. You have some 4K Blu-rays. I don't know. I mean, if they offer it, great. I'd rather see 1080p HDR myself more than the 4K, at least at this point. But I think out of the problems...
You can't even get 1080p if you're using really old versions of iTunes now, can you, Brian?
No, you can't. If you're on 10.5.3 of iTunes from years ago, you can't get 1080p. It's real bummer. Until the content is readily available, until it's out there so that you can use it. I think out of all the problems they have, the 4K is probably, it's in the top 10, but it's probably not even in the top 5. I want app logins for all of my channels that I get through my providers. I want a single sign-on that actually works for more than just three things or four things. They have single sign-on the Apple TV. Everybody was happy about it. Guess what? Most of the providers aren't on there. I don't know why, but they're not. So I don't know. It's
very slow adoption.
The providers, the TV providers, the cable companies, they really are the worst to deal with. And this is their being petty is causing a problem. You know, they don't want what's best for their consumers. They want what's best for them. And they feel what's best for them is you using their crappy cable box or crappy whatever. As long as they remain the gatekeepers to the content, we're not going to see any real innovation. So I just don't know what they could do to make it better. I have a Roku. I have a Fire TV. I have an Apple TV. I use the Apple TV more than any of them. And the only reason that I ever use the Fire TV is for Amazon's content. And it galls me every time I do it, but I do it. So... I don't know. I'm not really sure how you make a lot of these things better. I mean, the 4K will be great, but again, I want more content. I want less restrictions on how I can use it, and I want it available all the time. I am using the TV app a lot more than I ever thought I would, particularly when it integrates with other channels, because everything that I subscribe to and everything that I've watched on those other apps show up inside the TV app, and that's been nice. I started watching that Carrie Fisher documentary that came out back in January after she died, and I've had to start and stop it a few times because I'll get interrupted. But if I go to the TV app, because it's integrated with HBO, it shows up in the list of the last thing I watched, along with the last thing that I watched on Netflix, the last thing I watched on Hulu, the last thing I bought on iTunes. That's actually pretty convenient to me, I think. I want to see more things like that.
I'll have to try that app out. I really hadn't looked in there much. I stayed up till 2 a.m. last night watching the 6 or 7 episodes of the OJ thing that's on Netflix now that I never watched when it first came out, the OJ documentary, which I've really enjoyed, the one with Cuba Gooding Jr. playing OJ. I was...
That's not really a documentary. That's a...
Miniseries. Miniseries.
It's a dramatic recreation.
Yeah.
Dramedy
of the OJ thing. There is a documentary, though, the ESPN documentary, Made in America, yeah. I think was
yeah,
the.
Yeah, that's the other one.
So when you said you were watching that, that's what I thought you were watching.
Sorry.
And that was the ESPN.
This was for.
This was from the guy that does American Horror Story. So this is not a documentary.
I have loved it so far, though. I mean, they've made it just campy enough with keeping, you know, the everything that I generally remembered and some stuff that I hadn't remembered. So I was up till 2 a.m. watching that. I had to make myself go to sleep so I could get up for this today. The one other thing, you were talking about the TV boxes and stuff that I caught in passing. And I think I get this name right. Ajit Pai, the new head of the FCC. One of the things they did roll back this week was they were going to try to force cable companies into releasing their specs where you didn't have to get a cable box from the cable companies. And they've now rolled that back to where they're not going to force them to do that anymore. So they can still keep forcing cable boxes down people's throats instead of making them, letting them kind of pick their own device to use, which I thought was kind of BS.
Yeah, we typically don't tend to get political on this show, but I really do not like the head of the FCC. Tom Wheeler was a much better guy because this guy has come in and he's completely in the pocket of the cable companies, right? We're going to kill network neutrality.
He's a former Time Warner lawyer. Time Warner cable lawyer, I think, is what I saw somewhere.
I would say that you couldn't have picked anyone worse to run the FCC. But then again, Tom Wheeler had been like a lobbyist or something too, but he had a complete about face and was... If you're the head of the FCC, you're supposed to be working in the interest of the American people. And you've got somebody now who's working in the interest of the lobby that or the industry that paid him for so long. And that's not good. I mean, cable card was never carried out to the extent that it was supposed to. If you guys ever tried to get a cable card, I myself did not, but I know people who did.
I did.
I was part of that. I got the first generation of the really nice TiVo boxes that required them when you could have two tuners and
the Series 3.
That was a nightmare trying to get two cable cards to work in one device, and I never again. God, that was ridiculous.
I didn't have a problem getting the cable cards to work. It was getting Comcast on board to do it. I actually had to do a three-way, and this was 2007 now. I mean, this is, you know, several years ago.
Yeah, that's about when I did it, yeah.
And without dropping off into the rabbit hole, basically I had to get TiVo to three-way call Comcast with me, and they basically read off federal mandate that said you must give this customer cable cards and you have to support them because they were giving me the runaround. I called them probably twice a week for 3 weeks. I'm talking about Comcast, not TiVo. I called Comcast probably three times, twice a week for 3 weeks saying I need cable cards. And they would say, we either don't have them or we don't support that or something else.
You know, I have to be careful. I'll just go on about this all day. I liken what's happening right now to what happened to, say, the taxi industry. Right. When Uber came along, a lot of people have issues with Uber. A lot of people don't like Uber as a company. They don't like the CEO. Regardless, if you want to substitute Lyft in this equation, it doesn't matter. But for years, the taxi industry wouldn't take credit cards, or if you ever gotten a taxi that had a credit card, they would always say the machine was broken when you got to where you're going and force you to pay in cash. You could never get one out to you at a predictable time. Like, they had the worst service, and then they were basically completely upended by ride sharing. So when I see what Netflix, when I see what Hulu, when I see what Amazon and Apple are, they're all independently attacking the media cartel right now and saying, you know what, you're not going to play ball. Guess what? We're going to make our own stuff. It's going to win Emmys. It's going to win. It's going to be great. and we're going to take viewers away from you. And you know what? It couldn't happen to a better industry, right? They've done everything and they could that they could to protect the cartel and stifle innovation and keep you locked in and not give you good customer service. So these other companies are going to swoop in and they're going to do exactly the same thing to the media industry that's happened to the, say, the taxi industry. And they will have brought it on themselves, right? You look at the music industry, and the music industry acted like, oh, you know, the Napster was the worst thing that ever happened to us. But guess what? We have Spotify. We have Apple Music. We have all of these things that we didn't have before. It's never been easier to consume musical content at an affordable price. And I don't know anyone that doesn't subscribe to one of these now. It's insane. And people are still buying music through iTunes. I just read this week that iTunes, a lot of the money they're making are still through album sales. And I thought, who still buys albums? Well, apparently a lot of people do. But the point is, they're not buying CDs. They're not buying physical media. They moved on to streaming media. They're buying it from these independent third-party companies, and the customers really benefited. And I think the longer they hold out, the movie and TV providers, the more this is going to eat into their business until there's nothing left. They are going to rot from the inside out, and people are going to defect to a lot of these services. There's a lot of people to whom Netflix and Amazon Prime are their TV. When we talk about the coolest stuff that's on TV right now, it's not on network. I think we can all agree on that. And whenever a new series drops on Netflix and gets a lot of attention or Amazon, you know, that's chipping away at that cartel, and I could not be happier.
You could go on forever on this. I could too. Yeah, we'll just say that we disagree with the current politics of the FCC.
Yeah, I just hope that when the time comes for a new head of the FCC to come in, that a lot of the stuff that's happening now is only temporary, because it really needs to get rolled back. The network neutrality really is a bummer. And I've gone round and round with some of my friends. I have some friends that are like, it's wrong that the government is imposing restrictions and telling them what they can do. But it's like, on the other hand, the reason we've gotten to this point is because it's swung so far in the other direction that, hey, you wanna have your packets run across my network? Well, you're going to have to pay more for that, right? It's a utility, right? It is really a utility at this point, and it's not treated as such. And I don't know. Things are going to get worse before they get better, but I think eventually they will get better. That's probably all I should say on that topic.
That's all I got to say about that.
Exactly. You know, you watch. We're going to end up with tiers on our cable service where you're going to pay for get Facebook and Twitter, this package for this much, or pay for this to get this access to Google or this for that. And it's going to look just as awful as the television situation in this country, because the same companies that are doing that to you on TV are going to do it to you on the internet if they're given half a chance. And that's the scary part. But I trust enough people are going to revolt against that if they can to keep that from happening, hopefully.
It's like trying to make people pay more for their hot water versus cold water out of their tap.
Really opened up a can of worms on that one, Jim. All right, well.
Sorry about that.
You're not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
Anything else to discuss this week?
I think we covered it.
I think we covered it and plus some.
Good deal. Well, episode 26 is in the can. We'll be back next week, and that'll do her. Say goodbye, fellas.
Goodbye, fellas.
Goodbye, fellas. And subscribe where you podcast.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @infinloopback. That's @infinloopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdle. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.